handful of entrepreneurs, especially tech entrepreneurs who have used AI in the past, is changing. And I'll tell you why. There are foundational models in AI, which is basically AI's deep tech, large language models that can learn, adapt, taking information. That boat is already passed.
You don't think Africa can play it, or we shouldn't even bother playing
it? No, we can't. It's done.
Oluwang Ison is one of the sharpest minds in African venture capital and managing partner at We Capital. He's backed breakout companies like Paystack, Tizetzi, and Moneypoint.
A lot of people are afraid to associate with things until it starts looking like it. I'm in the business of seeing potential and respecting potential before it becomes obvious. If I wait for it to become obvious, I don't make any money. Imagine passing on Moneypoint. The valuation of this company at that time was $12 million. This is a billion-dollar company today.
To go a deeper layer, what did you see?
Before We Capital, Olu built a global career in Silicon Valley working with early-stage startups. He could have stayed there. Instead, he brought all of that experience back to Africa, betting on the continent before it was obvious.
Recently, your company released a report around the Afrobeats and the music economy, right? I want you to talk more about the opportunity there.
Afrobeat was the highest growth genre in 2023 and 24. People are looking, and guess what? They just look down and everything sometimes looks like it's necessary. We need intentional thinking around it. So we need to unlock that for us, or else it's going to be unlocked eventually and we're going to get 5%.
In this conversation, we dive into the emotional weight of building early, the psychology behind his biggest investment decisions, and how Africa can build for itself on its own terms.
I want you to explain, what is the opportunity for African investment and why should someone be excited? When someone clicks into this podcast, they may be going to work, maybe they're winding down for the day, maybe they're working out. Mm-hmm. And I want you to explain, what is the opportunity for African investment and why should someone be excited?
That's a very big and loaded question, mm-hmm. right? because there's just a lot of variables. Who's asking? What are they asking? Who are they asking? And what type of investment? Right? People invest in Africa so that we stop migrating to their country. Right? Some people invest in Africa because they want gay rights. It's still an investment if they get gay rights. Right? Not in monetary return. Some people invest because they want money back. Some people invest because they want us to learn Chinese. Right? Some people invest because they want to bug the AU building, right? But I'll narrow it down to probably why you're asking me that question, right? Because I am an investor by profession now, right? So I would say the opportunity for Africa is basically either a keg of gunpowder or the next best type of positive explosion. And I'll tell you why. You see the demographic, right? Majority young people, they have energy. So the energy can either go left or can go right, right? We have so many people that are not yet on the digital grid, right? That can either go down or can go up. And also, that comes with the fact that some might be misinformed or informed. And so Africa is that place with a lot of potential. People like to say it's just positive potential. It's not just positive potential. It depends on how we harness it going forward. And that's why we need leaders, right? And I don't, when I say leaders, I don't mean political leaders. I mean leaders amongst us who would determine that this thing is so heavy, we need to drop it in the right place. So the potential is that we're going to milk whatever is left of the blue ocean, right? So many customers need to come on board. We're going to be half of the world's population, right? Countries like Nigeria and DRC will probably be about 20-25% of the world's population. There's a market coming on board, right? And so missing out on Africa is like missing out on 50% of the world's potential if you wait long enough. But also, it going left, it's going to be catastrophic for the world. And so that's what the investment opportunity is.
So I want to double click into this because specifically why I'm interested is we get comments on our YouTube, right? And we get a lot of comments from the diaspora. And recently we got a comment about, you know, oh, I built something, I went away, I want to invest again. So someone in the diaspora, maybe they're not as sophisticated as you, right? That really knows deeply the markets and the details, but someone who has money, you know, they have a little bit of money and they're ready to invest in something. What would that opportunity look like for them?
I think there are two main ones. And these are the two places where I've kind of dedicated our time to. The first one is in new markets, which is fast growing businesses that are doing things differently. And tech kind of covers like 60, 70% of that, right? People want to think that everything that's fast growing is tech, is not, right? And then there's the other side of actually exporting our culture, cultural export. And the difference for this one is that the customers are everywhere, paying all sorts of strong currencies. Yeah. These are the two big places that I personally believe in, right? And that's why I'm also doubling down.
Okay. And so let's take it back to your pivot, right? Because you were in traditional banking,
correct?
Right? And then you pivoted to high risk, right? The VC investment world. What made you do that pivot?
So, you know, there's some choices that you make in life. Right. And then there's some choices that life makes for you. Right. And there's what you spend your life doing as a human being is trying to change the choices that life has made for you into the choices you want to make.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't choose, for lack of a better word, to be in traditional banking. I had gone to a private university in Nigeria. Didn't make a 2-1 or a first class. I made a 2-2. Your choices and your options, right? And then even when I got into banking, right? Banking didn't pay well. But it was probably the 10% of what I could have used to make something out of my life. And at that time, even a bank like Access Bank would not hire a 2-2. So you imagine how your choices keep shrinking.
Yeah.
But something happened. I got into Guaranty Trust, which at the time, it's not the bank it was now, unfortunately, which at the time were a lot of very forward-thinking young people, right? I got in there. I think it was one out of 1,000 occurrences, right? Because I wasn't also a traditionally academically smart kid, right? I was a smart person, but because of how I learned, which is another thing Nigeria misses, I was never on top of my class, right? And so I got into traditional banking. I think it was probably God's design because it was the place that was best that I could get into at that point. And I'm not going to lie, it was some very foundational years of my life, not just because of the place, but because I realized this is what I have to work with. And when you have to work with something that you think is not adequate, you milk all the value out of it, right? And so I had to work from where I was to where I needed to be, right? So by the way, you skip steps, right? In between that, there was me going back to the US, getting my MBA, working in consulting, right? For one of the bigger technology consulting firms, Forrester. Then moving to Silicon Valley Bank, doing early stage practice, working with some of the kind of companies I work with now. Then working with another venture capital fund. Then getting to where I am today, which I think I will probably stay for maybe the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Right? I don't have a resume anymore, right? And so it's steps and it's incremental. So it wasn't like I just chose, oh, I want to go from traditional banking to this. But I realized I wanted to be in a place where if I made decisions right, I would enjoy more of the upside.
Yeah.
If in a bank you do a good loan, you're going to get your 15 or 20% interest. If the company does significantly well, doesn't change. The company doesn't do well, you still drag them for your money, right? And so I felt that I had the potential to be somewhere where I could get out whatever I put in. And that's kind of the life I try to move towards.
Mm-hmm. And what did you have to unlearn from banking to go into VC?
I try not to talk about a lot of these things because I try not to offend people. Mm-hmm. Right? And I also try to be empathetic because human beings are not the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There are just so many things. And it's not just a function of me as a person. It's also a function of, as I said, the cards life has dealt you.
Mm.
Right? If you grew up in a place like Nigeria where you have a meeting with someone at 2 o'clock in Ikoyi, they can text you at 2:08 and tell you, I'm leaving VI now.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like madness to them.
Mm.
Right? Even though it's madness.
Mm.
So if you grew up there, it's not your fault that you come 30 minutes late for meetings. It's not your fault. Mm. That's what you've seen as normal. Right? So to go back because you know better and judge people who didn't have a choice in the matter, it might come off as non-empathetic, right?
Wait, you're not judging them. This is what you have unlearned.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just putting that as
a disclaimer.
Yes.
Okay.
Right? There are just so many things that you need to unlearn.
Mm.
Some hard skills, some soft skills.
Mm.
Right? And I would start with the hard skills because the gap is not so much,
mm.
right? When I started at Forrester, I almost lost my job after 4 weeks,
mm.
even though I was I was one of the two candidates that was hired out of 41 people. But mostly it wasn't hard skills.
Mm.
And I'll tell you, and that's why I said the gap for hard skills is still closer, right? Everywhere in the world, I'll talk finance. A balance sheet is a balance sheet.
Yeah.
If you do a balance sheet that is good, it's good everywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the same balance sheet I would do in my days in GT Bank are the same balance sheets I'm looking at today, trying to dimension a business that hasn't even started.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So hard skills. The problem is that the way we layer on hard skills, and these are the softer parts,
mm.
and they start from where hard skills end.
Mm.
How much do you apply yourself?
Mm.
Right? You know it, you can know it. How much do you apply yourself?
Mm.
And for people who have studied in other countries, like probably like the US, the first shock is when they get into a class, they notice that the Africans, if they don't know something, they just keep quiet.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right? They see it as, I don't need to say anything. All right? And you see the American guy who probably doesn't know it either. Right? Just yapping away.
Confidently.
Confidently. Right? And the first thing is, what's this guy saying? But what you notice after a while is that knowledge builds from the nonsense that guy has said.
Mm.
It's probably going to encourage somebody else to say something,
mm.
going to encourage somebody else to say something, right? And it starts building incrementally from there.
Yeah.
So it's soft skills you have to unlearn. Anybody can. CFA is the same everywhere in the world, right? It's soft skills. And that's why, for example, in my firm, I was the smartest person in the firm when it was just me.
Mm.
The moment we started hiring, I'm not.
Yeah.
I just know how to separate fights and say, no, I don't like the direction that's going. Do it again. But I can't do it.
Yeah.
Or I won't do it. I haven't done it in years. I haven't done evaluation model in years. I don't think I'll do it again, except something happens. But soft skills, how to show up.
Mm-hmm.
How to put yourself forward for additional tasks,
mm.
right? Storytelling, big part, right? How to weave through relationships, right? How to put yourself in the other person's shoes, how to mirror people, right? These are the things that are different. And also how much you apply yourself.
Yeah.
That hard work part, right? Africans, we're very smart. Mm. But our continent doesn't show that we're smart, right? We only start looking smart when we get into places that force us to apply ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? So that's really what I would say is the unlearning that you have to do. How you just approach life seriously on many different levels.
Yeah. You know, one of the first times we met was at the dinner at Salma's.
Correct.
I don't know if you remember, mm-hmm. but what I came up and I literally came back and I said, she wasn't at the dinner, but I said this to her and I was like, Olu is probably one of my first African investors I've met who I'm like, when I think VC, you're like the model for it. And I'll explain what I mean. Because I used to obviously be in San Francisco, so I've seen how VC works over there and how it works sometimes on African continent. And this is no shade to anyone. Mm-hmm. But that I've seen VCs forget portfolios that or companies that are in their portfolios, right? And there was something you did that night that I was like, man, this is literally what leading with empathy looks like from an investor when nobody knows that you're doing this. This is how you showed up. So I think it was time to pay for something. Mm-hmm. And people were bringing out other apps to pay. And you said, oh, my company's app, I think it's Herconomy.
Correct.
I'm paying with that. And I remember some people not maybe knowing about the company and you then went in to fully explain. And this is your free time. This is not work time. This is personal time, right? And I said to myself, like, Olu didn't have to do this. Obviously, this is his company. This is his company he's invested in, but this is his personal time. But you took the empathy to plug and promote and sell this company at this dinner. And I remember just saying to myself, like, man, if there's a company, and this is maybe a free ad, but if there's a company that's lucky enough to have me capital on their cap table, they've really succeeded. But I wanted to talk more through where did that empathy come from? Because the country can be very tight. People forget mm-hmm. companies that they've invested in after mm-hmm. they've cut the check.
Correct.
Where does that empathy, where you're constantly remembering like, hey, I'm here to be of service mm-hmm. to the people that I'm partnered with?
I'm trying to dimension it, right? I feel like when I dimension things, it might be easy to mm-hmm. get. So first of all, I feel like I came through life not as an expected winner, right? Almost like a constant underdog, right? I don't think throughout secondary school or high school, I came higher than 9th out of 20 people.
Wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. I don't think there was one time. Part of it could have been that I didn't really apply myself. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, if I applied myself, maybe I would have gone to 7th. Maybe. And this 9, I'm telling you, is the top of the range.
Yeah.
There were some 14 sprinkled in there. I feel for my parents because they might have thought, this one's going to disgrace us. Yeah. Right? But when you come through life like that, mm-hmm. not entering a room and thinking you're starting from somewhere around the middle or the front, mm-hmm. it builds a lot of character. Mm-hmm. Right? And it builds a lot of empathy. Mm. Right? I see how far mm. I've come.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Mm. But it's like watching my own life. Mm. It teaches you a lot. Mm. Even though you already knew some things, right? It validates it. And so when you come from that angle, you realize that people who are down mm. are not always people who lack competence. Mm. Right? And you also realize that starting life with privilege, some it's intellectual capacity, mm. some it's family background, some it's ability to go to good schools, some it's exposure, it can also hinder you in life.
Yeah.
Not, it doesn't always, but if you're not careful, it can hinder you. I've seen people who top their class just their whole lives. They change school. They know if I'm having a bad year, I'm fourth. Mm. I'm sure you guys knew people like that, that would get home and cry.
Yeah.
Because they came second or third.
Yeah.
And then you come out and life smacks you in the face.
Yeah.
It can send you into a depressive spiral because you are in a new place.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel I was made to be an entrepreneur's partner because entrepreneurship is very hard.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people who are on the bottom quartile or percentile today, some of the winners are there.
Yeah.
You just met them on their way up. Right? You just met them on their way up. And so you kind of have empathy for that, but you also fear people who haven't reached their full potential. And that's why I won't be afraid to carry a company that doesn't look like it today on my back. I've seen it happen too many times. I've founders who have done amazing, incredible things, right? If we have more time, I'll tell you.
We have
amazing
time.
And incredible, incredible things. I've seen people write them off.
Yeah.
So I'm in a career of, first of all, fearing people's potential.
Yeah.
Not just from my own life, but seeing it real time. And a lot of people are afraid to associate with things until it starts looking like it.
A winner.
But I'm in the business of seeing potential and respecting potential before it becomes obvious.
Yeah.
If I wait for it to become obvious, I don't make any money.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why I will carry a company that you might think is relatively unknown. Sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But I can see it. And that's why I decided to back them. Right? So shout out to Herconomy and Ife. One of my good friends, right? And so that's why I can also like, I think we're good friends with everyone in the portfolio because usually, you know, people see investors as old people who have this power over you, right? But it's different. It's just like, this is my own startup. My startup deals with money. I'll give it to your own startup and let's work this thing together so you can become successful, hire lots of people, bring people out of poverty, and you can bring me out of poverty too. So it's like that give and take. And that's why I'm not afraid to like either empathize with people who are not there yet, but also it's just the respect for potential.
Can you speak to any of those companies that people wrote off, you invested, and you eventually saw what they couldn't see?
Oh, there's a ton. I think the elephant in the room, which a lot of people might know if you have a proper Nigerian audience, is Moneypoint. I'm not going to mention their names. Again, the truth is, it's hard. I can't speak my total truth with a mic in my mouth, right? Maybe on my dying bed, right? But I do remember when we decided to back TMAPT.
Which is what it was called for, for our listeners.
And they've been grinding for a long time.
When I met Tosin, so it's 2017 or 20s. I think it was 2017. My friend who I met him through thinks it was 2016 when I was just visiting Nigeria at the time. And he was living in an apartment in Steel Waters. That's like if he's one want to be. Right? And we had interacted and I had seen the fire in his eyes. Years later, we were kind of doing, first of all, we actually did advisory work to put everything together in a way where we could tell the story, right? The second thing was I now carried it on my back to go and meet a lot of the investors I already knew to say, this is the next best thing. You have to back. I didn't have the money, right? And we had some, but it wasn't anything compared to what the company needed. And so I did speak with one of the GPs of one of the bigger funds, right? I won't mention the name, but they at that time, they managed over $100 million. we manage less than five and we've done all this work. And I said, come on, I think you should look at this. Blah, 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 blah. And he asked me, did he go to Stanford? I almost said, you're a fucking fool. That's the question he asked me. And I was like, I said, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I knew he went to, I think, Obafemi Awolowo University. And then he now asked me, did he go to Ivy League school? I was like, I don't think so. He's like, oh, well, look at it. That fund today is not worth the money investors have put in it. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. People outside might not know, mm-hmm. but like it's waiting to die. Mm-hmm. And this overlooked founder. And yeah, founder can probably buy the fund and just put it in his pocket. Right? And so it happens all the time.
Yeah.
People walk into your office in Lagos. It blows my mind. They meet two people here and here. This one is on his way down. Mm. This one is on the way up. But people cannot read potential.
Yeah.
Right? Or this is here waiting to fall. This person is probably going to reach it. People cannot reach potential. They judge them by the car they drive. Mm. Very stupid things. What they're wearing, where they went to school. And that's part of the reason why we're not creating a lot of wealth.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? Because we want to judge things for where they are. So I've seen that over and over. Imagine passing on Money Point. Mm. The valuation of this company at that time was $12 million.
Diabolical.
This is a $1 billion company today.
Yeah.
If they had put $5 million, they probably would have left that company with somewhere around 250.
Yeah.
Their whole fund is 100 million.
Yeah.
Sure, they would have returned it. Yeah.
Just 5 million. Right? But life has consequences, right? And so that's the thing. We always see people overlooked, especially in our context, right? And there are many reasons, but I see it all the time. You know, I'm in the business of just looking at things that don't look like it. Yeah. So I see it all the time more often than most people.
Mm. And actually, just to go a deeper layer, what did you see? Like, what did you see that was undeniable?
So let's go back. These guys at that time, they were building software for banks. Mm-hmm. It looked like a technology consulting company. Let's not lie. Right? And at that time, there was InterSwitch. There was QuickTeller. Mm. There was Flutterwave. Mm. And Flutterwave had raised maybe up to like 40 million at that time. Right? And Paystack had also raised.
Yeah.
So what I found was that these guys, because they had been building software for banks, they kind of understood the banking infrastructure of the financial institutions, even more than some people in the financial institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's why they were consulting for them.
Mm-hmm.
But to change that into a retail business, it was a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with a founder who didn't go to YC.
Yeah. Or Stanford,
right? And didn't speak like Obama, right? So it's hard for people to just see it. There's like a mental block. So first, what's the meat of it? These guys are technically superior engineers.
Yeah.
By the way, that Monify product spun out of a project that they wanted to do at InterSwitch. Mm. This is according to Tosin.
Yeah.
That they just couldn't do. Right? It's no disrespect to InterSwitch, but organizations have their priorities.
Mm.
Right? And so it's kind of, they never dropped that bone because both of them came out of InterSwitch. They were doing consulting for a few years, but that thing never left. But it's not a one product company.
Yeah.
Mm. It's an excellence company. So you can keep replicating excellence if you apply yourself, right? So I saw that. I saw the chemistry between those guys, and I saw a space. The biggest problem we had at that time was transaction failure rates. Mm-hmm. And why do things fail? A lot of times, downtime or bugs. How do you improve it? Engineering has to improve. Mm-hmm. These are the two engineers that I think can solve that problem. Mm. So let's first get them doing where, let's get them to go where the money's at first, and then back them. All right. And so in very simple lay terms, that's how I looked at it.
You know, as you're saying this, mm-hmm. it's such a clear thesis. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, anybody would be like, well, if you presented it this way, if they had been in America mm-hmm. and you were making the same analysis, or maybe if you were Andreessen or A16Z and they were mm-hmm. making the same evaluation, it would be like, are they technically sound? Mm-hmm. Yes. Do they know their stuff? Yes. Mm-hmm. What advantages or what unique advantages do they have mm-hmm. that would enable them to attack this moment, attack mm-hmm. this market and execute? You list all of that. But then in our environment where people move, I always have this quote where like a lot of men have eyes, but few have the gift of perception, mm-hmm. right? Or penetration. Mm-hmm. And, but they didn't have the Ivy League stuff or they didn't go to the right accelerator, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I love this conversation so much. You don't know how much I've been looking forward to having this conversation. I even heard that at InterSwitch, they have InterSwitch ventures or corporate ventures from the corporate side. And that one of their thesis is we can never let another mistake like MoneyPoint happen again. Because it's like, if we had invested in this, what are we talking about?
That's not their first time. There was another company they missed too.
It's not time to go into mistakes that have happened.
This one.
But my question is, and this is for our viewers, a lot of founders struggle to understand this investment landscape, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's the distinction between venture capital mm-hmm. and private equity. Like I have, you don't want to know the amount of founders who like hit me up every day like, oh, I have this idea and I want to raise. And I'm like, but bro, like there's no VC, there's no model for this. VC is trying to return 8x, 10x, like mm-hmm. we're trying to return a whole fund. Mm-hmm. Like this business model doesn't fit for it, right? Mm-hmm. Can you, for our listeners and for our viewers, explain the difference between venture capital as an investment thesis or vehicle mm-hmm. and private equity and what those two profiles are and why some folks who I know who are used to private equity mm-hmm. can't wrap their heads around venture capital and some folks who are used to venture capital mm-hmm. can't wrap their heads around private equity. Can you, for our listeners, please take the time to expatiate on both?
It's a very good question, and it's a question that needs probably careful distinction because they're different, but not also so different.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, explain the difference between African and Black. Mm. It's like, you can use them interchangeably, but there's some times where the difference has to show.
Yeah.
So let's start from the fact that, in the investment landscape, the two broad ways people invest are public and private. Mm. Right? And ownership of a business is called equity. Right? And so you have public equities and private equity. If you buy a stock in Google or in Dangote that is publicly traded on an exchange, it is public equity.
Yeah.
If you buy a stock or some shares in a company that is not publicly traded, it's private equity. So now that's how this started. Remember that private venture capital is probably 200 years younger than private equity.
Mm.
And so private equity just meant you're investing in a private company that's not public.
Mm-hmm.
And what did private equity companies do? Remember, before technology, they would put money, I'm a sandblaster. I make bottles. They will put money in those companies. They will own a piece, some equity in it. And then they'll either share the profits or whatever the financial incentives that come from that business, right? And then when companies like HP and Dell were going to start, it's like, this thing not adventure. Right? And that's why I usually like to liken the word adventure with venture capital. If I say, let's say I'm in Ikoyi right now and I say I'm going to VI, you won't really classify it as an adventure, right? Yeah. It's like, he's going to VI. If I tell you, oh, I'm going from here to Seychelles, like all those babes that ride their bikes to Seychelles, you'd be like, this one has gone on an adventure, right?
Especially with that Nigerian passports.
Exactly. So if you're funding a journey of someone who's making bottles and they need to go from 1,000 bottles to
10,000
bottles, it's a private equity model. So it's usually incremental. And that's why if your business is incremental and doesn't sound crazy to you, it's probably best for traditional private equity. Don't forget that venture capital is a type of private equity. But private equity existed as a term before venture capital. So now, when you start seeing companies, right, like Apple, who would now start moving from zero to 10,000 computers a week. It's like, we never dreamt of this. Or someone comes and tells you that, hotels exist, but I want to start a business where I'll take a picture of someone's room and I'll tell that person to put their private picture of their room on the internet. And then another stranger will now look at that picture and decide to go and sleep in someone's house. You don't know if he's a serial killer, right? You don't know if he's a rapist. You go and sleep in someone's house overnight and close your eyes and pay them. Someone else says, oh, I want to start this business. I'm going to name it Air Bed and Breakfast, Airbnb. In Nigeria, you know the boy, get out of my office. Right? So, and as a business, that sounds like an adventure.
Yeah.
Right? That's what venture capital was created for. And so when you say, I want to do something that sounds normal, that doesn't sound like, oh, there's InterSwitch here, there's FutterWave, there's this thing, but we're going to create one that is going to be, when it doesn't sound crazy like that, private equity. When there's an element of get out of my office, venture capital, right?
That's why
the venture capital guys seem a little more like outcasts in the financial services space, right? We walk into rooms because you have to be a little weird to believe that a stranger is going to come sleep in your house and that company will become worth $40 billion. Right? Imagine someone told you or sold Uber to you. Oh, no taxis. This app, I'll now use to call someone that's there with their personal car. They'll now come figure out where I am, pick me up, take me here. I won't exchange cash. Then this person will do it. It sounds crazy. Right? So it takes another crazy entrepreneurial person to say, take this money. And I know in 6 months, this company is either going to blow up or be dead. Right? And so it's a spectrum. But when he starts looking more like a crazy idea, it's VC space. And the thing about risk, right, is that the more the risk, the more the likely return. Right? And so I get calls, people are like, bro, this is fun. We're already profitable. You can double your money or you can triple your money. And it's like, I get that. It makes sense for me to invest in that from my pocket.
Yeah.
But from the venture capital model, if your upside is 3X, don't forget there's still risk inside there. Right? So it might probably be zero. It's not for venture capital. Right? It's for other traditional types of funding. A bank loan, right? Gathering your friends and family, how people did business
back in the day.
Right? Family businesses, family owned businesses, or getting money from a private equity firm who wants to make double their money, which is a lot of money. If you turn 1 million to 2 million, you're rich.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the big distinction, and they're gray areas, but that's the basic understanding.
So I actually want to go back to what you said originally about two investment opportunities, because you're talking about the Wild West, right? And risk. And recently your company released a report around the Afrobeats and the music economy, right? I want you to talk more about the opportunity there, because I've been hearing more and more about this opportunity to invest in culture, to export it. It's one of the things, like you said, hard currencies, but so many people don't understand it. Can you break that down?
So I'll tell you, the entity that actually published our reports is an entity called TAG, which is an advisory outlet owned mostly by We Capital, right? And TAG is almost our creative expression. We're getting to the place where we're getting more comfortable with our traditional business, right? And now we can express ourselves in industries that we're interested in, right? And that's why you saw that report. There's many more coming. And so what we find is, and I'll tell you for free, that creative and cultural export is the next tech.
Yeah.
The problem is, as all things, it might go left or it might go right. And one of the things you would notice that happened when the tech bros came together was that we first had to define the state of play. It's usually the first thing. Because anyone who wants to put their money in something has to understand what is the state of play. Data is very, very important, right? And that's why it was the first step. It's an advisory company that actually helps a bunch of SMEs in the creative space to put together information to attract investors.
Yeah.
And I don't mean Alaji down the road, right? Who is your uncle. I mean to actually unlock institutional capital. Because I've been watching from the sidelines. There's only so many things you can do as a human being. I've been watching from the sidelines and there's so much potential there, but we're not unlocking it.
Yeah.
Right? For the value that our creatives can produce, we're only capturing very little of it.
Yeah.
And that's because we don't even know what success should look like. And that's why we said, let's start from actually defining what is possible. If you look through that report, right? And I don't lead that business directly. My colleague Faye leads it and she's done an amazing job, right? She actually used to be my chief of staff. Then she revolted and said she wants to do something else. And I was, okay, carry this, because it was always in-house. And so what the first thing you find out is that from just, there were just so many things we had to narrow down. So we narrowed down how Afrobeat is driving a lot of the creative and touristic avenues. There's so many other things. There's physical art. There's film.
Fashion.
There's fashion.
Food.
There's sports. There's so many things. Right? But we decided, you know what, let's flog the most obvious kid, it's Afrobeat. So what we did, the first thing you'll find out is that in 2024 alone, right, there was like $1 billion spent.
$1 billion. Okay.
Right? Spent, actually 970 something, but spent, driven by the Afrobeat energy. And the team kind of linked it into what happens at parties, streaming the entertainment scenes, and linked it to even other things like leisure activities, Ilashe, Dirty December, right? They were just, I pitied them because there were so many things to capture, right? And we got some of our friends, Bizzle, shout out to Bizzle, Tega, and Maven, to kind of tell people some things that they knew. This started because I do have one of the A-list Nigerian actresses. I think she's one of the best in the world anyways, as investors in Weed Capital. Mm. And we've just been friends. And there was a time where they were doing a deal with, let's call them a Pan-African bank, like a development bank.
I think I know which one.
And they couldn't really communicate. Mm. Right? They couldn't. It's like I'm talking English and you're speaking Chinese.
Yeah.
But you need the money in my pocket. And I want to give you the money in my pocket.
Yeah.
But we cannot align. Right? And so I had to be dragged in. Right? And when you sit there as someone who's partly artistic, right? Sang in church choir. Mm. I play the drums, play a little bit of the bass, but I'm hustling in finance, right? And it's like you speak both Chinese and English.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, 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 no. This person's not trying to take advantage of you. Mm. You know, artists, the first thing is, it's brain drain. They're trying to take advantage of us. And so it was very enlightening to kind of help bridge that gap.
Interpret.
Right? But do you realize that, yeah, if you do this thing, even if it looks good, this $1 million they're giving you, they're only going to get 500 back.
Yeah.
Would you like that? No. So make let this person make 2 million.
Yeah.
And this is how you can go about it.
Mm.
You're happy. That person's happy.
Mm.
Most of your projects are loss making anyways.
Yeah.
Even though it looks good. And that's the other crazy thing about the creative industry. We judge outcomes by visuals.
Yeah.
Oh, that person is big followers.
Mm.
Right? That person is big Nigerian streams.
Yeah.
And this person has to rely on probably their poultry farm or their restaurant.
Yeah.
That's what's actually paying their bills, even though they're big in their career. Right? So you can make it as a creative and not make it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we broke that down. Right? 500,000 people came into Lagos, right? If each person spends just $10, that's $5 million bucks.
Yeah.
This is for in the Diddy December, December
yes,
period.
Yeah. In December, right? There was like another $2 million spent on just going to Elisha.
Mm.
Facts. Right? Why isn't Elisha a whole resort strip?
Mm.
We say we're smart.
Mm-hmm.
We all schooled in these fancy schools, right? And we have house after house with generator fumes and Useni that you will call to bring barbecue. And we're just leaning like that.
Mm.
And it's almost like we're living day to day without vision and without ambition and without drive.
Yeah.
Right? And so you've seen that kind of thing, or you haven't seen it, which is why we published this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you 10x that, that's how much? $50 million in December alone. Right? It's not going to cost more than $50 million to build a whole resort.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to get on the road.
Mm.
Again, you need soft skills because you need to go and storytell.
Yeah.
$50 million is easy to get in some rooms.
Yeah.
It's easy to get in some rooms. The way you tell this guy to give you 50K is how some people have $5 million to give you to go and pursue fuck all.
Yeah.
And so we had to come down to those numbers. The nighttime economy across Lagos, right? And three times a week, a night, someone spends 615,000 naira, which is like $400 on a table, averaging places high end like Boho and then like the places in Ikeja or in Shomolu where there's one chairman there that has spent 150K, right? Has thrown the club into chaos, right? So when you drill down, it is the first step to opening up what the potential is so that people can see. When I was privy to be connected to some guys at TPG, Kupanda, when they were going to do the Maven deal.
Yeah.
It was wild, wild west. Right? It was wild, wild west. Because it was like, what is even here? But the opportunity was so much that they could shoot in the dark.
Yeah.
So we need to do that same thing for all these sectors. And the first step is information. By the way, if you haven't read the report, look at the report. It's just a bunch of things. And for entrepreneurs, it tells you where you can go.
Yeah.
Right? Because if my job and my team is to just fund entrepreneurs, you also need to tell them where to go. Yeah. A lot of brilliant people are building another pay stack. How can you be building another pay stack or another lending company in 2025? So you've left this bank, you're a sharp young guy in your 20s or your 30s, and you decide, let me start another digital lending company. How? There are 1,000 out there that are struggling.
Yeah.
And then maybe there are 5 that are struggling but are big. They might see the light. Mm-hmm. How big is the market?
Yeah.
And then there are places that are right in front of you that you might not see. Mm-hmm. Some people are not seers. They're just executioners.
Yeah.
Executors, right? So it's also kind of telling you where to go. We're going to drop more of those kind of things.
Yeah.
I know my team is side-eyeing me right now. We're going to drop more of those kind of things. Also, on the Weed Capital side, we just dropped a report for what international remittances in and out of Africa looks like. That's been widely publicized. That's going to $1 trillion.
Is it still an opportunity?
What are you saying?
It is.
Because
when you say trillion, what are the factors that led to being a trillion?
But the thing is, a lot of that money you're seeing is ending up with Western Union, MoneyGram, RIA, Small World, World Remit.
Yeah.
And like the normal nature of Africa, we take 5% of our resources.
Yeah, that's true.
And it will be bad if we say the generation before has failed us. And we do the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's easy to be comfortable if you and I can take that 5%. That 5% is a lot of money, right? Just take it and chill. Or you blow this thing up so that you're safer in traffic because everyone has the means of livelihood, right? So I think that space is big. We're just beginning to unfold and unravel it very slowly.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to build there is a pipeline, a funnel, and just give global investors some insight so they know where to shoot. There's money looking for it, right? Afrobeat was the highest growth genre in 2023 and 2024. Followed closely by Latin American music. People are looking.
Yeah.
People are sitting in New York and they're looking. And guess what? They just look down and everything looks like it's in disarray.
Yeah.
Right? Someone doesn't even know their numbers. They don't know what kind of music to make next. Yeah. That's why Bizzle was talking. He says, I go to the club or raves to listen to sound to kind of figure out where next to go. And when I'm doing ARR, to kind of be able to direct artists. We need intentional thinking. And most of us are really smart.
Yeah.
We need intentional thinking around it. So we need to unlock that for us, or else it's going to be unlocked eventually and we're going to get 5%.
Yeah.
But I want to go even deeper with this culture component because I personally am very interested in it because it's clear.
Correct.
Like it's crystal clear. Mm-hmm. Like before we started, our editor was saying, oh, is that MOT, right? And I was like, yeah, that's like, this is what I'm wearing.
Mold the label?
Yeah. Fashion. Like, and nobody is understanding that it's probably the one thing that you can build it here and export it in the, and there's people waiting for it. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to understand, why don't investors understand that? Or is it a different vehicle that these brands have to get the money? Because all of them are telling me, like, I have a friend who could easily be a multimillionaire with her brand because 60% of her clients are in the US. She's like, I can't find money. I can't find people to invest in my brand.
Again, I have to censor what I say. Right? it's a unique problem. And the reason is that I feel like sometimes as entrepreneurs, we need direction, right? Not just hustle. My guy, if I iron official in DVS.
That's our guy.
Oh, really? Yeah. He knows I'm the hardest guy on him. He comes 5 minutes late for a meeting. I'm beating him up.
Yeah.
Right? And what you find is that there's no lack of talent. Right? What we lack is direction and applying ourselves. Right? The GDP per capita for a country like the United States is $84,000.
Per person.
What do you think Nigeria's is?
$800 now.
It's gone up. It's now like 1,300.
We're doing something.
So there's like an average Nigerian is 17 times poorer than someone in the US. Forget the fairly used G-Wagons you see on the road. Right? We're 70 times poorer than someone in the US. And that means that for all the affluence you see around you, statistics shows that it's concentrated, right? And if it's concentrated, what is the size of that concentration? CBN said the people who had 500,000 naira and more in their bank accounts, I think we're about 100,000 people.
Yeah.
We're 200 million people plus. So when you sit down with that data as someone in fashion, it should become a moment of reflection first. Where am I targeting?
Yeah.
Right? This is just business. Forget about how it looks and the designs. Oh, this is dope. It's dope. But you're not going to make H&M's. You're not going to make 1,000th of H&M's revenue. You're dealing in two different markets.
Macros are different.
Facts. And then, so all our creative talent, where do you sit? Luxury. Right? My shirt is Zara. And if I, me probably in maybe top 5% of the country, still stops by our social media, give me one nice Zara shirt. So you can imagine what's happening to the rest of the country.
Yeah.
The ones that know what they can and should afford.
Yeah.
That's another caveat, right? Because some people can spend 60% of their income on outward appearance, which is another kettle of fish. So most of our very smart designers are in premium clothing. In a country that's 70 times poorer than places where Zara and H&M sell.
Yeah.
So you already have a disconnect. By yourself, you've shrunk your own market to people in Victoria Island, Ikoyi, and Lekki Phase 1. And the rest of the fraudsters, wherever they may be. Right? So you've done that. But sometimes it's not people's fault. The question is, do we have the infrastructure to produce low-cost clothing in Nigeria? Scale. The question is no. Right? It's difficult. Some people actually start. If you look, and I sit and I watch these things from just like my little corner, right? People start and be like, oh, I'm making trendy, ready-to-wear clothes for everyday Nigerians. Month one. Month six, right, is now focusing on our designs. Month eight is someone at the Met Gala wearing your stuff. And you plaster it all over for PR, right? And then year two is luxury. That's where it all goes to die. Right?
Yeah.
So you see the progression of everyone going to luxury.
Mm.
And it's not because they started off to be blind to the market reality.
Mm.
It's because your costs are pushing you there.
Yeah.
By the time you finish the landing cost of that dress, you realize that it can't be less than $100.
Yeah.
And then it goes up from there. Right? If I can wear Vera Wang for $300, it's hard to convince me on a large scale to wear something else that was probably made by a less skilled artisan.
Mm.
That the seams are not even as solid for that same price.
Mm.
Right? If you just check out the seams of a Zara t-shirt, it's not very common that you see even those qualities of seams in our high-end luxury brands here.
Mm.
As someone who I do, because I wear a lot of linen, so I wear from local brands.
Mm.
But the cost, so you're selling something lower than the quality of H&M, right? For the price of a really high-end designer.
Yeah.
That makes it hard for you to compete on the global stage. You're only going to sell a few, right? I was hearing the other day, one of the popular fashion brands, right? And someone was trying to tell me how there's money in designer fashion and that, and was like, that person made $1 million last year.
Really? Lamba.
That's one level. If you think it's big, I thought, where we're going, you need $1 million in top line and you're the biggest around. You're tiny.
Yeah.
H&M probably makes that a day.
Yeah. From one store.
Exactly. And this is where we need to go.
Yeah.
Right? A local company like Money Point probably makes that a day.
Yeah.
And you have now equated ambition. Let's cascade it down. You pay for a generator. You pay for staff. Some of them will steal your needles and threads, right? They will come late. So they will steal about 20% of work hours from you. Oh, there was traffic. There's always traffic in Lagos, right? It wasn't a surprise that day. So you have to deal with all those things.
Leakages.
Yeah. You have to deal with all those things, right? By the time you buy materials, which you, a lot of times you're bringing in from China, right? And you don't order, we don't even order in bulk like that.
Yeah.
So you're a small business. So it's expensive for you. You finish doing that. Let's say your cost of goods already is like 60 or 50%, right? Then you enter administrative costs. You do all those. Then you do PR.
Mm.
So if you made $1 million, and these are the top, don't forget, right? As a company, you made $1 million. At the end of the year, you might end up with 200K if you're very smart.
Yeah.
Most end up at a loss.
Mm. Most.
And these are the successful ones, right? And so, when you put that in your hand, you are sitting in front of an investor who needs to deploy every year $50 million.
Mm.
You are like half a drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right? And going out to raise my fund from zero opened my eyes.
Mm.
I would struggle to get into some rooms, right? And they, oh, how much are you raising? I'm raising $5 million. In Nigeria, that's $1 billion.
Yeah.
And guess what? They will tell you, well, our minimum check size is 20.
Yeah,
so one check.
Yeah.
We had that issue.
Yeah, same that issue too. Yeah.
Right? One check. Then it now makes you sit down in your hotel room and think, money did this world, sha.
Poverty.
They say we can't even give you, if you can't accept what's here, we can't even give you.
We will take your whole fund.
Yeah.
And guess what? We don't want to be more than 20% of your fund.
Yeah.
So what you need from us, if you're raising $5 million, is $1 million.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, there's a disconnect.
Yes, huge.
And so you now, and this is me raising $5 million. Mm-hmm. Where if I brought that money back to Africa, you're a star. Kaval is going to publish you.
Yeah, I made it.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so you can't even raise that.
Perspective. Man.
And this is institutional capital. I remember there was a big fund, well-known guys, that I went to. They couldn't give me any money. Then they called us back like 3 or 4 weeks later. They were like, we can't invest in you. You're too small. But from our like...
private fund.
No, from our budget that we can do anything, we'll send you $250,000. Yeah, I was dancing. But it was like, you're too tiny. Yeah. So let's dash you this money because we like you.
Yeah.
And this is the amount some people need to actually... turn their businesses around. But it's too small. And so that's why we have to think ambitiously. If you're, and guess what? This is the top that we're talking about. This 1 million down to 200K. Mm-hmm. It's the top of the funnel.
Yeah.
Because that means you've sold 1,000 things for $1,000.
Yeah.
Or 3,000 things for 300. Some of the stores open and close and don't sell anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. But who can absorb that capital? Because I think that's what I'm trying to think. Mm-hmm. Like, if one of your theses was, I want to invest in culture. Mm-hmm. I know that it's $1 billion. Like, I know that. But what type of company can absorb the real money? Because, and I'm saying this because our viewers as well, because now we've gone through our own Mamba issues when we raised. Mm-hmm. And I remember, so now people come to us and say, oh, I just want to raise like $500,000. And I'm like, you can't go to the VC and tell them that. that's
no, some VC like ours, our average check is $500,000. And that's now big.
Mm.
I remember my first check was 50K.
Yeah,
15. And he didn't even send it to me. It was the investor I told the wire to them because I had so much problems in my life. That money comes, it might disappear. I was like, just send it.
Yeah.
Send it to the guy that needs it, right? I'm building for the long term.
Yeah.
But there are people who invest that kind of money, right? The thing is that, and a lot of people have investments. This is what, they don't usually come out and just tell you, but there's somewhere, someone who's giving them $20,000, $10,000, $50,000. And when we started doing this, what we realized, you're not capitalless.
Yeah.
The business is not just taking off.
Yeah.
Right? And so, the one solution I see usually is that you have to re-engineer the thinking. Mm. There's so many small designers. People need to think in teams. You see the way tech bros came alignment, together? Teams. And say, we're going after this big opportunity. Right? People are raising for record labels. Mm. Oh, we want to do, we would have 2 artists and 3 artists and we'll make 100K. There's not one dome that can take 50,000 people in in Lagos, Nigeria.
Yeah.
Even in West Africa.
Mm.
So what are you doing? It's like painting over a house that they haven't even screeded.
Mm.
So it's like we need to take one step back and build visions.
Infrastructure.
So we need the infrastructure. That's what
correct. You mean. Or we can even raise money for them.
Mm.
Let me tell you, do you know it's more likely that if 3, 4, 5 top brands with that are leading come together and say, we want to build a factory because you cannot, this fashion thing is not creativity. What does it take to do this?
Yeah.
Right?
It's random.
It's capital intensive industrialization.
Yeah.
Right? So you need to take a step back and say, we want to build something in Ekpe. We've been doing this for a while. We've tested the market.
Yeah.
This person has worn my dress. That person has worn my dress. This is this person. They've done this. They've done this. But we realize that we're only going by default to premium brands. We become premium brands in a poor country. We need to backward integrate, right? And that's why sometimes it looks like it's easier to raise big money than to raise small money, right? Yeah. So now they tell you we need $20 million. They're developing finance institutions that will give you that money, right? They're bigger institutions. And now with guys like Tag, like, okay, you know what? Let's help you tell the story.
Properly.
Right? Oh, you want to build a, turn Ilasha into a resort. I keep saying it. If I finish with Tag and nobody has done it, that's my next thing.
Yeah.
Right? Go there, go to the government, get concessions, bring the traditional rulers together, get concessions, pay, and go out there. They're people, they're leaders amongst us.
It's true.
Companies have raised $250 million. Mm. What does it take to go and raise $20 million? Mm. Put an airstrip there. People will land from South Africa, from Ghana, from around, stay there for 3 days, stay there for 5 days, and go back to their countries.
Yeah.
The water there is blue. Right? But we're taking speedboats and canoes and going every day.
Crazy. Like, and the stress.
Yeah, just doing that. And I understand that hardship doesn't really allow you to open your eyes.
Trust me.
Right? Hardship keeps you surviving.
Yeah.
Right?
I have to say something about this, actually, because the image that just came to my mind. Remember when you went to Agona in Egypt? Mm-hmm. Have you been there?
No.
It is Ilasha.
Yeah.
What it Agona, should be.
Yeah.
What it should be. And I said, this country, Egypt, like literally you can land there, right? They have a small area with like what, 6 restaurants?
Like a strip.
All great food. Mm-hmm. You can go around, buy trinkets,
The beach.
Then the whole strip is homes, hotels, world class. Mm-hmm. The hotel you went to, we're the only black people there. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, why, what is it that Egyptians saw that we cannot see? It doesn't make sense to me.
We're all smart, but we're smart on social media.
Yeah.
When it's time to argue with someone, right? But we need to sit down thoughtfully and say, and the world is just waiting for us.
That's it.
We need to sit down thoughtfully and say, how do we organize like ants? Mm. Because at least because of world and international laws, nobody's coming to take Africa from us again. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's like, you guys have to stand up.
Yeah.
But we're not standing up and we keep complaining. Look around the continent, right? Before a wave of like me and some other venture funds, no black person had raised a venture capital fund.
Yeah.
You don't have to be white or be mixed.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Right? And also, just look at the ease. Mm. It's easy to criticize, but look at the ease with which some non-melanated folks come to Africa, put together a story. Mm. Some guy raised $2 million in Kenya to serve office lunches. Mm. $2 million American dollars.
Wait.
Of course, the company shut down after 8 years. Yeah. If you're attempting to mention the name, don't.
No, I don't even know the company.
No, I know the company. I know,
right.
I mean, but this happens at
lunch.
Yeah, it was like, oh, lunch. We're going to be packing food and dispatching it.
Yeah.
$2 million in Nigeria. They call that $3 billion. You know, everyone's a billionaire now in Nigeria. Yeah. That guy's a billionaire. That's $3 billion naira.
Yeah.
And the company shut down after 8 months.
Yeah.
Because it didn't work, right? But it shows you the amount of potential if someone can just, and we keep saying, oh, white folks come here because they bring capital a lot of times. And guess what? Even our folks invest in them.
Yeah.
So the money that was sitting next to you, you needed somebody to come, look around,
see it,
conceptualize something, tell the story, package it, and collect money from your uncle. You'll be walking out of your uncle's office. You'll be walking into your uncle's office that you've been begging for 100K since. And that guy's walking out with a check of $50,000. He's like, oh, this is my friend. You know, these are you. But he's gone.
Although this conversation is just triggering me.
It's a trigger. I try not to, but like this. So we need to stand up.
Yeah.
As people, right? And not everyone can do it at that level.
Yeah.
But you have to max out your ability. Some people are going to be big employers of labor. Mm. Some people are going to run small cafes because some people are going to work for them.
Yeah.
But we need to align to a large extent. And aligning doesn't just happen like that. It takes a few people to just stand up. And then when you start gathering resources attracts people, right? We can kind of align, but there's a lot of opportunity.
So this is now my section of this conversation, right? And for context, I moved to San Francisco in 2006. And I started doing Afrobeats events there for
the capital
years.
Of homeless people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you know, but started doing Afrobeats, basically ushering into Afrobeats into California. Mm-hmm. And then we played a role in the year of return in Ghana, where obviously from years of doing Afrobeats, we then brought like so many people to Ghana in 2019. But we had started doing that 2017. We tried to do it in Nigeria, but Nigeria happened to us, so we moved to Ghana. The reason why I'm even going and giving you this context is what I came to realize, because my background is actually law. So I studied law, but then I met Ian at Flutterwave and he convinced me to leave law and I joined Flutterwave and transitioned to tech. And then because I had a background of law, entertainment by doing events and then tech, what I got to observe was the tech bros or sort of conversations where, what's the word I'm looking for? Mental models, right? Mm-hmm. That the entertainment guys might have, but the tech people might not know, or the lawyers might know, just whatever it is, right? It wasn't as cross-disciplinary, right? And Ghana happened. And I remember, you know, people doubted, bro, that year, the level of doubts where I'm saying to people like, yo, we're selling the tickets. We know these people are coming because they come to our events. They've booked for it. And I'm in Nigeria telling so many of the guys, like, guys, I'm telling you this wave is coming. Going to Ghana, telling them, nobody believed it. Till it then happened. It's like, oh, where did this come from? And I now start to realize something, that we have a problem with like data in this continent when it comes to us as African people, where people are not necessarily able to just tell you hardcore numbers. It's always lamba, like, yo, it looks like this.
Anecdotal stuff.
And so the reason why I say this is when I think through like the TPG deal with Maven, and obviously Maven is super successful now. Mm-hmm. But at the time when they did that deal, I was personally sick to my stomach because I was like, I know how much value that Don Jazzy has created over like 20 years. Mm-hmm. But because we didn't necessarily have the right numbers, the right structure, the right storytelling, when the valuation really comes, the humility from, I remember there was a time like we were trying to do a deal and somebody was saying, oh, give me 50% equity. And you're like, 50% equity? Like, what's going on? But they're like, no, but do you know who I am? I'm like, but it doesn't work that way in the real world, right? And in the real world, 1% or 0.5% or 0.2% of a company that's a rocket ship matters, right? And so I guess my question here, it's been long-winded, is how are you able to navigate? Because I'm pretty sure in this creative culture, economy, so many people are coming to you, pitching you. How are you able to navigate to explain to them like, hey guys, let's slow down. Let's think about it in terms of idea, product, team, execution, and then tell this story in a way that allows you to attract institutional funds or venture capital funds that allows you to go execute. How are you able to navigate that? Because it was my frustration. That's why I pivoted to tech and just said, let me leave these people alone. Because I was tired of being in rooms where you're trying to explain things to people and they just sometimes don't get it.
Yeah. First disclaimer is, I don't know if I'm going to get frustrated too. Let's start from there. Right. Still in the early days. But I'll tell you something that happened between me and my colleague. And sometimes we will organize like calls between creatives and people who are supposed to fund them. And they would show up late for the call, right? There was one person that said, oh, it was my birthday. Right?
Wait, the creative showed up late?
No.
The fun.
The creative didn't show up.
They would say it was my birthday.
His or her birthday. Yeah. Right? It's like, it's my birthday now. So it's like, yeah. Right? And so Feed said something to me. She was like, I think I need to start with education. She said, I think we need to build a boot camp first. Right? We had worked with a few people, right? people like RSA,
yeah,
who I think was on this podcast,
yeah.
And she gets it because her background is different, mm. right? She's half creative, half savvy girl, half hustler. So she kind of gets it, mm. right? Some people are really just creatives.
Yeah.
The problem is first is that they and the financiers don't think in the same way.
Yeah. Mm.
And the second thing is that there's no structure to support them. Mm. Imagine being Ye's financial advisor. You almost die. You just open your... And imagine if it's like a public company. Mm. You just open Twitter. You just see the shares. You're just like, hey, this guy has killed me. Right? But there's structure that keeps people, that kind of guides people.
Yeah.
Here we don't. And that's one of the reasons why we started TAG.
Mm.
Right? That don't talk to them for the finance stuff.
Yeah, talk to us.
Right? And not only are we going to talk to you about what they think, we're going to educate them too so that we can think together. The problem or the good thing is that they're starting to have so much potential that somebody needs to help them. It's like a kid with a gun.
Yeah.
You're like, you know what? I'm going to play with you, whether you like it or not, because there's so much potential, but we're not getting anything. Most creators are struggling.
Yeah.
Mm. They're making money from out things that are not their main hustle, except just a few. Even the ones that we think are like in Afrobeats, right? The number of artists who what they make can actually sustain them.
Mm.
Forget the flashy life on Instagram. Yeah. It's not that many.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's a fixing process, but education is going to be a big part of it. Mm. And what happens with social proof is that if you educate one person or a set of people and you and the results can be seen, it's more likely that other people will want to pattern.
Mm.
Right? You can see the effect. There was a far-reaching effect of the Kupanda Mavin collaboration in our industry.
Yeah.
Right? There was a far-reaching effect. Mm-hmm. People are looking like, ah, next thing. Ira, Rema, Johnny Drill. It looks like these guys are getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And even when it's not like a hit like that, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's like there's a method to this madness. And people are looking sideways and trying to learn. This is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
This is how tech was.
Yeah.
A few people went to YC, opened their eyes, came back and said, bro, you have to change that.
Yeah.
We have to change this.
Yeah.
That your pitch deck, put this before this.
Yeah.
This is what I saw at YC.
Yeah.
This is what this guy said. And so it just started, the education started to flow, right? It started to diffuse. That's what we want to catalyze.
Mm.
A few people who structured properly and are making waves, either will bring the rest under their umbrellas because there needs to be a lot of consolidation. Right? If your bro that respects you has raised money and has gotten structured, why do you need to go and start your own production company? They will call you and be like, come and join me.
Yeah.
You be COO. We all eat. Right? And now you have a stronger company. You have a bigger front that bigger can attract more capital and people can trust. People are going to come and work for you guys. See what they're seeing. You see the ripple effect of Andela, Flutterwave, Paystack, all those companies. Because when you leave there, you almost have an insight on how to build a high growth company.
Yeah.
And then you replicate and replicate and replicate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're trying to catalyze. Is there's an education process that needs to happen.
Yeah. Do you see it as like, and not necessarily like for like, but an incubator YC type model for the second, and maybe just more from the, just the education part, like come here, a boot camp, understand these mental models so that way when you're now thinking through your business or thinking through your creative side of things. It's not to say you're the one that has to pitch it, but at least have an understanding of it. So, you know, because if it's something as basic as I can't count how many businesses come to me and they're pitching something to me. And I'm like, do you even understand the macros of the environments that you're actually operating? Like, mm-hmm. It's almost like I start trying to dash my friends or stairs, what do you call membership when they used to have the yeah. subscription. I'm like, just read about the country you're in. This product doesn't, where does it scale to?
Yeah.
You know?
That might be a way. I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah.
Right? Even though I know my colleague was trying to work on something like that.
Yeah.
And getting like DFIs to fund it.
Yeah.
They will.
Why not?
There's money sitting in pockets
yeah.
where people just need you to come say the password and collect it.
Yeah.
The problem is we want to get to the money without saying the password. We want to shame them. We want to use braggado.
Yeah.
We want to gaslight them. We work so hard. You guys can go away. But the money is literally there
yeah.
because money chases opportunity.
Yeah.
So I don't know if a structured incubator might be it or we might just need to put out a lot of information that can help people
catalyze
right that way and also try to help a few leaders
yeah.
that then spread it, that kind of like culture right of thinking structure in a structured way. And also I'm sure more companies will come up that would say, you know, we work in this space right, we're not just lawyers. You know, a few years ago there were no entertainment lawyers. Maybe I'll do.
Yeah, I'll do.
And now someone who's a board member of TAG, Mr. Hightower.
Yeah.
Right? But can you name five entertainment lawyers?
I mean, I know I'm a lawyer.
Okay.
So, or I did law school. Right. So, yeah.
We're here, entertainment law here.
In Nigeria. I mean, again, like I said, but I understand what you mean. You're correct. You're 100% correct.
So it's like that thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just the way they were saying tech lawyers that time, right? I remember we were doing a deal in 2018.
Yeah.
Big respected law firm.
Yeah.
Big respected law firm. And there was a partner, I remember, because when she walked into that meeting, right? It was like a Crocskin Birkin, right? I was like, this one has chopped plenty of money. She was supposed to help one of our companies.
Yeah.
And we were talking and she was the one who was like the tech lawyer.
There. Yeah.
And then later that night, she called me. Said, how do I do this step sheet? I'm like, if you're the tech lawyer, we're finished. Right?
Yeah.
I'm sure in the office is just the one that likes tech.
Yeah.
And so, as I say, entertainment lawyer, right? Gay levels.
Yeah.
Definitely. Right? Some have been in a life deal before. Some have decided, I'm a lawyer. I went to law school in Nigeria. I have no formal entertainment training.
Yeah.
Neither have I worked in a big entertainment company. But I did follow boys go Obi's house. Right? And so I want to get into this. And there's nothing wrong with
it. There's nothing wrong with
it. Because it's a start.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of us started in tech or in VC.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But that's still where we are. We need to build capacity.
Yeah. Mm. I want us to transition to artificial intelligence, right? There's no way we could have you on here without getting your thoughts on it. So AI is exploding globally. But what's your fund's actual thesis on AI? Where do you see the opportunity for Africa specifically?
Big question. The next wave of companies that will be investable, not just in Africa, around the world. You know, the world is getting smaller now.
Yeah,
it is.
And that can be a danger for Africa, right? Because we might not, everything we consume might be from somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's just next to you.
Yeah.
I think the wave of entrepreneurs, especially tech entrepreneurs who have used AI in the past, right? It's changing. The entrepreneurial archetype is changing. And I'll tell you why. There are foundational models in AI, right? Which is basically AI's deep tech.
Yeah.
Large language models that can learn, adapt, take in information. Right? And that boat is already passed. It's been built.
You don't think Africa can play it or we shouldn't even bother playing
it? No, we can't. It's done.
It's already done.
And it's billions of dollars.
Even in the US, it's done.
It's done. Yeah.
right? It's done. And then there's now application layer.
Mm.
That thing has been built. How do we use it? This is what the rest of the world does with outside US and China does with technology, right? I don't know if any of these mics, did we build any of these mics? No. Well, podcast bang, right? So that's application layer.
Yeah.
We're not going to create a podcast from scratch anymore.
Yeah.
Just buy the lights from China and make your own podcast in Pidgin. Mm-hmm. They can't do that one. So now we're an application layer. But there's something that's significantly changing how we're going to invest going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We call it influence and infrastructure or bricks and bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And that means the archetype of the founders, and this is talking more to tech founders, is going to change from now on. You heard when I talked about Tulsi and Felix at Money Point. Mm-hmm. What did I say?
You said there was technically sound.
Right.
Yeah.
That era is going away.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because everything they built to that level of accuracy is now a couple of prompts away.
Yeah.
Vibe coding.
Not even just vibe coding, actual coding itself. Yeah, self,
actual
yeah.
coding.
Yeah.
Right? There's now a couple of prompts away.
Mm-hmm.
So your tech is going to work as good as my tech and her tech.
Yeah.
Cancel. Right? If I have a 95% success rate, you're going to be having 95% success rate. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be having 95% success rate.
Yeah.
So what do you take to the market?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now you need to build bridges and influence.
Mm.
If you walk into that room, who does the CEO think understands the organization the most to get that contract?
Yeah.
What brand does the person on the street think speaks to them the most?
Yeah.
Right? Recently, A16Z just acquired a company.
Mm.
Guess what type of company it was?
Media.
Media, but it was a podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Say more.
No, but we understood. I read about it. I just
we can make some arrangements.
No. This is interesting because this makes me want to reach back out to her. I don't even know if she's still there. So the lady who is head of editorial for A16, from the conversations I remember having with her, they took this media thing very seriously.
Correct.
Like back then.
Yeah.
You know, this was years ago when I spoke to her. So can you break that down? Because other people listening to this might want to understand why that was significant.
Sorry, Ola, before you even go there, because I want you to just answer fully and holistically. Okay. Stephen Bartlett, like the diary of a CEO guy, right?
2 months ago.
Yeah.
Well, he has a podcast. He's a Niger boy.
Yeah, he's a Niger boy.
I didn't know that.
That's a Nigerian brother.
So,
bro.
Did he tell you that?
We have a picture together.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a Nigerian brother.
But did he tell you?
Yeah, he told me that he's a Niger boy.
Okay, that's a Nigerian
brother.
We met
in Sweden. Yeah. We're both speaking at Tech Arena.
Yeah.
That was in February.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I didn't know that.
So, I don't know if you know, but he's obviously like, that's our Nigerian brother. Like, we appreciate the work that he has done. So, in one of his last podcasts, he was talking about AI and the role of just basically going back to this, what you were just saying, right? But he says, and I'm paraphrasing, he says, in a world of AI where the cost of making things, whether it's video, software, pictures, or images, goes to zero, right? The real advantage, and this is not what he said, so I'm paraphrasing at this point. The real advantage isn't what you can make. It's who can you reach, right?
Correct.
Distribution is the new moat, right? So AI has democratized creation, but it has not democratized attention. Anyone can create, but not everyone can be seen. So the future belongs to those who've built trust-based audiences, not just output. The reason why I wanted you to have that context so you can answer holistically is, we were talking about how the future archetype of founders will look like, because if before we could compete on tech and that's our moat, but that moat no longer exists, what does this look like in an AI sort of world?
Yeah, it's everything that makes you human.
Yeah.
That's the next moat.
Yeah.
And this is speaking mainly for like tech founders, right? Do people want to work for you? Do people like you? You see my boy, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Mark has rebranded.
Mm. Mark S.
Zuckerberg.
Yeah, oh, Mark. Yes.
Like, right?
Mark, yeah, he's trying to be cool now.
Mark looks very different.
Yeah.
Because the world is changing
yeah.
or has changed. Do people want to work for you? Do people want to do business with you?
Yeah.
Right? Who can you reach? How do people identify with your brand?
Yeah.
And the same product, how do you sell it?
Yeah.
How do you decide who to sell it to?
Yeah.
When to sell it? How to sell it? These are the things AI cannot do for you.
Yeah.
At least not yet.
Yeah.
Right? People say we're going to a place where super agentic AI, yeah. where agents to agents. Right? Yeah. So my procurement guy who's AI, your sales guy selling to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Me, I'm just in my house sleeping. But that's... We're not there yet.
Yeah.
And so today is how can you make that happen?
Mm-hmm.
How can you build bridges?
Mm-hmm.
How can you influence people?
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the regular your mm-hmm. influencer cliche, yeah. right? It's like, do people trust your recommendations?
Mm-hmm.
Do people trust your decision making? And do people like you?
Yeah.
And do you connect? Does your product connect? How can you distribute?
Yeah.
These are the things that are going to change because products are going to become homogeneous.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why EVZ Fund,
but
it's crazy podcast. When I saw it because we started our podcast
yeah.
like 6 months before that.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't have A16Z's money.
Hmm.
Maybe would I come to acquire Afropolitan?
Right, you know, let's yeah. talk. No, because it was one of the reasons that informed the reason why we started the podcast, because obviously we're a startup yeah. as well. But then you looked into the future Correct. And you're saying to yourself, okay, if before we could compete on engineering,
mm-hmm.
that's no longer going to be a thing. If you wanted to compete on maybe a product like software, no longer a thing. What seemed AI proof? And this thesis that Stephen articulated mm-hmm. was what we came to mm-hmm. before he even articulated it. And mm-hmm. it was one of the things that informed us starting the podcast because mm-hmm. you're saying to yourself, okay, what are now our human strengths?
Correct.
She's always been a curator. I've always been a curator, whether it was taste making or events, mm-hmm. but that this is something we feel like we can do. But now, going to explain this to a traditional VC
mm-hmm.
or to a traditional venture capitalist who might not be as aware of where things are shifting and Correct. Saying, hey, my podcast with a go duo, like, okay, all right.
Right. And that's the thing. Luckily, places in Africa and Nigeria are kind of have like a 6-year lag.
Yeah.
Right. Because the truth is, it's still cheaper to hire someone than to use AI.
Yeah.
Even in Africa today,
yeah,
right? It might change soon. But that's where the world is going. Human beings are going to work less and your originality has to shine through.
Yeah.
Because everything else that is not a human trait, an AI agent is going to be able to do.
Yeah.
Right? They'll be people's personal assistants. They would do their calculations. Mm-hmm. They'll do everything else. Mm-hmm. Right? Except smile at people originally.
Yeah.
Right? And so, it's an interesting time. If we use it properly, we'll have to work less, but produce the same amount or produce more.
Yeah. No, it's so amazing. So then are there any startups on the continent that you've seen that are meaningfully using AI, or is this still mostly hype within our ecosystem?
Half and half.
Mm.
So first of all, as I said, today in Africa, it's still cheaper to hire someone.
Yeah.
The upside is probably precision, speed. And so I know a bunch of companies already playing with generative AI and just like the utilization levels.
Yeah.
Right. One company that comes straight to mind is OKHi.
Mm-hmm.
A company we did invest in, OKHi, is trying to help you
mm-hmm.
figure out an address that has no address.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you live in Ibadan. You know how you say Ibadan? Oh, next to that house that has a black gate, blah, 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 blah. Then you see one signboard. And the day they take that signboard away, you're lost. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So OKHi is playing in financial services, giving everyone a digital address.
Mm-hmm.
So if you gave that address to Uber, either it's in codes, they would find you.
Yeah.
You don't need to describe anything.
Yeah.
Right. And so, that boils into KYC. Right. And there's a lot of change in behaviors that a financial institution can use to know that this person is not who they say they are, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. they're deploying AI in that application layer, right? A lot of other companies are still playing yeah. around with it, right? But that's one use case that I see very
Before vividly. We transition to our rapid fire segment, I want to talk back on Money Point specifically mm-hmm. because I remember at the time, obviously there was OPE. Mm-hmm. I think people thought OPE was just going to swallow the whole market, mm-hmm. right? And I remember, I'll tell you my own experience because I like to play with products too. So mm-hmm. I think I said this to you at Thomas, but I downloaded OPE, downloaded Money Point. OPE was claiming, hey, in less than 2 minutes, bank account. Mm-hmm. So I did OPE. They were right. I opened chat. Then I was like, MoneyPoint
had a real critic.
No. MoneyPoint hadn't advertised the same thing. But I said, uh-huh. in my head, you know, you're like, will a Nigerian mm-hmm. owned and backed startup be the same thing? Or will it be like, you know, uh-huh. bro, less than 1 minute, pew, pew, pew. Mm-hmm. Account opened. I said, God. And then going back to Tosin didn't go to Harvard, didn't go to Stanford. There's no like thing you can say, like, how did these people build a product this good, right? So I think for me, the question is, does MoneyPoint represent a blueprint for how African fintechs can scale authentically without needing Western validation? And also the other part, I always joke with my friends who don't understand how they also, part of also why they succeeded, which was mm-hmm. I said to them that MoneyPoint solved the who shit am I going to hold mm-hmm. in Nigeria, like a lot of people want to know, to explain that is, there's a low trust society.
Correct.
So who shits am I holding? Mm-hmm. And I always say to them, my money point solved that in the sense of, I've visibly seen when that ping goes off on that POS, how the merchant just visibly relaxes. They don't know whether that money is really there. Mm-hmm. They just know that I've gotten confirmation so that mm-hmm. you can now leave. Mm-hmm. What are some of, like I said, the original question, like what can other companies or startups take and learn from MoneyPoint?
I think that, oh, by the way, Tosin and I were talking maybe last week and we were laughing at how I was afraid of OPE and he was afraid of OPE at that time.
Yeah.
I was like, do you remember? I was like, oh, yes. But that's an old fear. I think the reason was probably they had raised like 180 million at that time. And MoneyPoint had raised less than 10.
Yeah.
So it was a fierce battle.
Yeah.
And they're a Chinese company.
They have 1,000 engineers, you know, they can throw.
China, they don't price. They just give you the money. Go and dominate somewhere else. But that aside, I think that I don't want to say any company is the blueprint. Mm. Because then you might have either survivor's bias,
yeah,
right? Because I jumped this gutter with my back. Mm-hmm. You that you have stronger for jump, then you want to go and jump with your back, right? I would say the one thing I see across board for mm-hmm. a lot of successful companies is ambition. Mm-hmm. And again, you have to empathize for people who don't have ambition.
Yeah.
Because ambition is a function of how much your mind has stretched. Mm. And how much your mind has stretched is a function of your environment.
Yeah.
Simple. Mm. I didn't even grow up. I don't even think we were upper middle class. Mm. But I grew up bang in the middle of VI. Mm. Right? And so it stretched my mind. Mm. Even if I didn't have it in my pocket, if you were rich, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right? Our friends over there are rich. These guys are rich. And so when you want to set life goals, mm-hmm. you already have something that you can compare it to, mm-hmm. right? I was listening to Ian on this podcast mm-hmm. where he said his dad at some point was driving Cabu Cabu mm-hmm. and he was thinking, you know what? Let me not be a Cabu Cabu driver. Mm. I see policemen collecting egunje from Cabu Cabu drivers. Let me go and be policeman. And that's because at that point, he's not thinking, let me co-found two unicorns. Mm. What is a unicorn? Mm-hmm. He's like, the one I can see, you're collecting money. I want to be a police officer. And so that's why education plays a big role. in just opening people's minds.
Yeah.
So even if you don't get there, right? If everything went well, it would have gotten there.
Yeah.
And that's what I find with Tosi and his team. Mm. And almost every day is like day one.
Mm.
Right? He's now sitting on probably the top half
mm-hmm.
of most valuable banking institutions mm-hmm. in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And the boy is still hungry like a startup founder.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you then look around you, you see Wave.
Mm-hmm.
You see Chime.
Mm-hmm. SoFi.
You see Nubank.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, I'm a small boy.
Yeah.
And that's how it keeps going, mm-hmm. right? I remember when I think I raised maybe $3 million mm-hmm. and somebody forwarded it to my dad.
Mm.
Ah, $5 billion. Your child. Right? And I was so disappointed.
It's like,
because I was like, I didn't reach my $5 million target. No. Right?
Yeah.
So it's, and some people,
perspective,
they're just like, if I can raise $1 million in my life.
Mm.
And I think that thing is ambition across.
Yeah.
It's like, can we become market leaders
yeah.
for this segment?
Yeah.
And again, how they created trust. Now you talk about holding someone's shirt.
Mm.
The first people's shirts that could be held was them.
Yeah.
And then they started with merchants.
Mm.
Right? And to sell to merchants, you need to break that trust barrier.
Yeah.
But it's easier. Because it started with physical sales.
Mm.
Till maybe last year,
mm.
MoneyPoint never really did retail.
Yeah.
You guys that went and opened MoneyPoint accounts,
mm.
who came to sell to you? Nobody.
Nobody, yeah.
What happened is that you went to the store.
And saw it.
And this thing, this blue thing, they work like magic. Yeah. And you're like, I need it too.
Yeah.
And so what happened was it was a route to market.
Mm.
B2B2C.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right? Unlike OP, who had to go B2C.
Yeah.
And remember, they went to buy motorcycles.
They burnt so much. Do you remember?
It started as a transportation company.
Yeah.
They were Gokada's biggest competitor at the time.
Yeah,
the Chinese are different, man.
Ibadan and all. But there was a time I heard they went to Ikorodu Road.
Yeah.
You know, they sell cars and motorcycles there because so that one of their competitors will not buy bikes. They went and just bought everything and locked it in a warehouse. And so what was happening is that you need transportation, right? Yeah. So Opay was a bike company,
yeah.
if you remember.
Yeah.
That was the market penetration
strategy.
But it was so much more costly.
Yeah.
Much more costly, almost wasteful.
Yeah.
Right? At that time. So when that guy tells you, okay, you will pay with this transaction right now.
Yeah.
Then you break the trust barrier because, yeah, it's true. Nigerians have that trust barrier.
Yeah.
And that's why banks hold us
mm-hmm.
by our necks because we know we have somewhere to go.
Yeah.
But MoneyPoint was able to break that. But I believe maybe in a few years, there will be branches.
You know, it's funny because Dayo, who we had on the podcast, was saying something about there's a Nigerian way
mm-hmm.
of doing things. And I can imagine other startups at the time could have been looking at OPay strategy and say, oh, maybe that's the only way to penetrate the market mm-hmm. at scale.
Mm-hmm.
And I think MoneyPoint probably had the insight of the Nigerian way from obviously maybe their background in working with banks, but also this mm-hmm. understanding of this trust deficit aspect of things too. Mm-hmm. And so they took that route. I think my next question is, having used their product, when I first used their product.
I like how you ask me these questions like I'm the founder.
No. You have perspective. You never have perspective.
I can answer this question.
Yeah. And what I'm more saying is I've used their product, which is the mm-hmm. retail product, I bank with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember after I banked with them, I said to myself, these traditional banks are in trouble. Like,
of course.
They're in huge trouble. And I was even telling you, I think I came back and I said, I give it 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like, if Mandem is still using GT or Access in 10 years, I'll be shocked.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
What is it? If you agree with what I'm saying, mm-hmm. right? Can you articulate like, what is it that the traditional banks are not understanding about what's happening in this environment?
So the first thing is just a fact of life,
mm-hmm.
right? Change is a constant thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And incumbency makes you lazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's no one that is more hungry than an underdog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
right? So I worked for GT Bank in 2010, right? Tayo Adeyemi of blessed memory was still the CEO at that time, even though he had gotten sick. But I could understand why GT Bank became a big bank. When they started, they were like what Moneypoint is today to those big banks. You could walk in. Do you remember that you had to turn off your phone if you got into banks, right? Anyone who's over 35 will know. They will make you turn off your phone. GT Bank came and said, pick your call. They were like, ah, you will rob us. Yeah, for security reasons, don't use your phone in the bank. And people were like, it made going to the bank such a chore. There were balconies you could go and smoke on. There were a few things that you used to do before. Maybe you used to sign five times. GTP would say, no, if you sign once here, we're good. And that stayed the nature of that bank till some point they said, you can even deposit via a machine. Oh, we'll give you cards in one day. So what happened is that it looked like the same thing that's happening now. Now they look like this big old whale, right? But in 1991, it was like, who are these young boys? Because let's check it. Tayo and Fola were in their 30s. I think Tayo was like 30. Fola maybe 35. Right? Startup founders, banking startup founders. If you get what I mean.
Yes.
And so it's almost happening again. But what's happened with tech companies have learned how to stay on top for a long time because they remember how they got there and they don't lose it. And that's why GTB to some extent has been forward thinking amongst like the banks. Right? So I think it's just what happens. Some of our kids will never know of these banks.
So we're going to switch to the rapid fire segment. I think the first question I have is, what's a failure that taught you something you now carry into every deal?
I think it's been progressive failures, right? Today we manage about 20 million and then we have about 25 million in AUM minus what we've exited. But my life building We Capital has been one of serial failures, right? I came back to Nigeria. I tried to build with a fund. It wasn't, I realized, I think I wasted my time. This is not going to end up where I expect it to be. I have to pick myself up and start again. I start again, I say, I'm going to raise between 5 and 10 million. I ended up shy of 4 million. Right? So I took it on my chest. I failed. And then the next time I say, I'm going to raise 20 million. And I raised 12. But I've 3x'd the old one. Imagine 3x'ing your business every 2 years. Right? But you might look at it, you failed. So I'm a serial failure. Right? But you're going from 0 to 5 million, to 10 million, to 20 million. Next thing, you gain, now you're trying to raise a $300 million fund and you raise 100 million. And you forget where you're coming from. And so that taught me a lot. Right? Just in terms of how you can turn failures into just moving forward incrementally.
So next one is founder you passed on but still think about.
None. It used to be Gokada. Right? I used to think that, oh shit, I'm going to regret this. Right? But Nigeria'd. And so it's no longer is. Crazy.
One unrated startup city in Africa.
Abidjan.
That's a good one. AI in one word. What is it to you?
Easier, faster, better.
Okay. The biggest red flag in a pitch deck.
Leaving out your competition.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say it's 200 million people in Nigeria and market.
It's not a red flag, it's the truth.
No, I know, but
it's just over plate.
It's a red flag.
What's a soft skill more African founders need to scale globally?
How to give feedback.
A book or podcast that changed how you think about money.
Money. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
That's a good one. And then the last question we ask every single guest on the Afropolitan podcast is, who do you want to see in that chair and whose story needs to be told?
In this chair?
Yes.
Umar Barry. He's Guinean. So you might have to do some arranging.
Yeah. What's his context?
Of a, cross-border payments company called Corridor.
Corridor.
We capital portfolio company. Nice. I think it's a story of grit and building from non-traditional backgrounds.
We're going to go to Ghana soon. There's a bunch of people there we need to interview.
No, he's at Guinea. Not Ghana. Oh. Ghana is next door now. He's at Guinea.
Maybe I'll tell you next time he's in Lagos.
Yes, please.
Why We Capital, though? Why the name We?
We tossed a coin. I wanted Yes. And my co-founder, Francesco, who's French-speaking, wanted We. Toss coin, got We. And also, we did search engine optimization.
Yeah, of course.
And We was a lot more unique.
Yeah.
And we'll go further into the future. So, we should picture you.
Wait, so Yes Capital, that's what you wanted to go with in Nigeria?
Correct.
So how are you going to be saying no?
We'll say yes in a different way.
Yeah, okay. All
right. Yes, but.
Yes, but.
Yes, but later.
No, I'm glad we went to your Francesco. It's like, yes. No.
And we spoke more to the inclusiveness of Africa. We got Anglophone Africa.
Yeah.
We needed to connect to Francophone Africa, right? To be truly Pan-African.
Yeah.
So it works out.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you
for interviewing me.
You've been in my own personal treat. This conversation was A1. Thank you.
This one would have kept going.